The magic of identifying objections. Most of the time, recruiters hear the phrase, overcome objections. But the reality is, if you can't identify an objection, how can you overcome one? If you can't label it, how can you deal with it? So, identifying objections simply means this. It's uncovering and then isolating obstacles that may cause an applicant not to make a positive decision to join the Air National Guard. Now, without sounding too academic, this ability to identify objections is a combination of your ability to have integrated thought and intuitive insight. So, how do you uncover and isolate those obstacles that can cause an applicant not to make a positive decision to join? Take a piece of paper and list the 3 or 4 most common objections that you get when you're attempting to sell an applicant on joining the Air National Guard. Here's a common objection. The commitment is too long. If someone tells you the commitment is too long, what that really means is that you have not created enough value in their mind that exceeds the cost of joining. In your world of military recruiting, if the perceived cost or commitment exceeds the perceived value of the recruiting opportunity, you won't gain an accession. However, if the perceived value exceeds the perception of the cost or commitment, you will gain an accession. It's as simple as that. What about some other objections? Here's just a few. I don't want to worry about deploying. The technical training school is too long. I need to think this over and talk to my spouse. I'm not happy with the career field. Or, I see no reason to join. That's why I left active duty in the first place. We could go on and on. There are lots and lots of objections. Now, to determine what someone values, you have to ask them the right questions. For example, if the most common objection you hear is, I'm worried about being deployed if I join the Air National Guard, you need to ask questions about the applicant's knowledge and perception of deployments. Here are some questions that you could ask someone concerning deployment. How familiar are you with how the Air National Guard participates in worldwide deployments? What concerns, if any, do you have about a potential deployment? How familiar are you with the Air National Guard's deployment policies and procedures for selecting personnel to deploy? How familiar are you with the federal laws concerning civilian job protection for activated guardsmen? What do you know about the benefits that would be available to you and your family if you were activated and deployed? Now, before we go back to the deployment objection, let's touch on the psychology here. After identifying the most common objections you get, you should be developing some questions that can help get the applicant to tell you specifically how they feel about a common objection. Notice, too, most of the questions should start with W, what, or H, how, rather than words such as do, are, or can. Using open-ended questions rather than yes or no questions encourages your applicant to talk. During the interview process, you want to find out if you're going to encounter an objection when you ask them to commit. If you encounter an objection too late, it's because you have not mentally identified it as an objection. Early in the interview process, you want to ask the right questions so that you can precisely position your solution. This is not a situation where you're building towards a wall of objections that you're trying to mow over just before you ask for the commitment. It's actually something where you want to ask questions to wipe them out before you ever get to that point. So, let's go back to some of those questions and work through them. How familiar are you with how the Air National Guard participates in worldwide deployments? Well, if someone says they don't know that guardsmen are currently serving alongside their active duty counterparts, you know that you can make a strong case that Air National Guard units are part of the Air Expeditionary Forces and operate under an Air Force-wide deployment schedule that allows its members to plan ahead for when their unit might be called upon to deploy. In summary, the Air National Guard gives its deploying members as much advance notice as possible. Now, they may respond with a question something like, what are the chances I will be activated and deployed overseas? Your follow-up response could take the form of a question and be, if I might ask, what concerns, if any, do you have about being deployed? Perhaps the applicant might say, I just started a new civilian job, and I'm worried the company might cut me loose if I get deployed. This now tells you their big concern about deploying is how it could impact their civilian job. You need to create significant value around the subject of deployment, scheduling, and job protection rights provided by the Air National Guard to its members, because this is a major issue for this applicant. Acknowledge the applicant's concern and explain that, as a member of the Air National Guard, you are subject to activation and deployment. However, it's Air National Guard policy to seek volunteers first. Presently, we're filling many of our deployment requirements with volunteers. Follow up by asking the applicant if they are familiar with the laws surrounding reemployment rights, as well as the other legal features and benefits available to activated guardsmen and their families. Explain the benefits associated with each feature of the law. The second example of an objection had to do with the length of technical training school. Try asking a question like this: how wide of a time range do you have for attending a technical training school? The word range is probably the big issue here, because you're not trying to nail somebody down to specific dates at this particular point. But if you don't ask that question, you're likely going to get an objection later on, especially if the school length is longer than the applicant expected. Now, if the applicant can give you some ranges, then you really have something to work with. The third objection dealt with the applicant having to talk over the opportunity with their spouse. If you know an applicant is married, or you suspect the applicant is not alone in their decision to join the Air National Guard, you ought to be asking a question such as, who else, other than you of course, is involved with this decision to join the Air National Guard? When you get a response indicating that a spouse, parent, employer, or anyone else for that matter, is involved in the process, you must ask the applicant how this person feels about their decision to join the Air National Guard. Next, you must offer the applicant the option to invite that person to participate in the sales interview process. If you don't invite the other person to join the discussions, there is no way to build value in the eyes of this third party. The next objection pertained to an applicant not being happy with their career field they worked in while serving on active duty. Try this form of questioning: how did you enjoy working in your assigned career field? If the applicant tells you they didn't enjoy their job, plant the seed for possible cross-training with a statement and question such as, one of the great benefits of becoming a member of the Air National Guard is the opportunity to cross-train into career fields with available openings. If there are opportunities for you to cross-train into a career field of your choice, how open would you be to attending a technical training school to learn these new skills? Listen carefully for the response. Some applicants may jump at the opportunity to cross-train and would make themselves available to attend a lengthy tech training school. On the other hand, some applicants would rather remain in a career field they already know rather than go through the time and hassle of cross-training. And in the last example, the applicant says, I see no reason to join the Air National Guard. That's why I left active duty in the first place. This will be a tough one to overcome. Perhaps the best place to start is by asking the applicant about the things they enjoyed about being on active duty, and then showing him or her how they can keep those benefits. And you will also want to know what they didn't like about active duty, so you can show them how that issue may not even apply as a member of the Air National Guard. For example, the applicant who doesn't want to move around anymore. You can explain to them how guardsmen choose the unit they want to belong to and can normally stay there for the rest of their career. Now, all of these questions will allow you, as a recruiter, to develop the right questions to ask before you ever attempt to present your opportunities. Knowing the answers to these questions will give you the best opportunity to create the most value you can for your features and benefits, so that you'll be able to deflect attention from the commitment before it ever comes up in the first place. Therefore, to identify objections, you need to learn how to listen precisely to what is being said and not being said, because the facts are simply these. Objections fall into three basic areas, and here comes the million-dollar information. 1. You have not created value. 2. You've not met a specific need they have. 3. You have not removed a fear that they have. Think about this too. If an applicant is very fearful about some impending event, such as becoming unemployed, they probably don't really care what the commitment is going to be. So if somebody's out there and they say, my mortgage payment is riding on this, I need to join right away. Once again, the amount of commitment or potential for deployment is not that much of an issue. In fact, if an applicant is so desperate for income, they might welcome the opportunity to be activated and deployed. Don't assume because an applicant asks about deployments that it's going to be a negative. Some applicants may be anxious to deploy. Now, in some cases, objections are nothing more than stalls. Stalls, in fact, are things that you can easily identify by asking questions about specific issues. Normally, those are just conditions. That way, you'll have a clear understanding of whether you're dealing with a stall or a legitimate objection. You need to always determine if it really is a true objection or if it really is a stall. The objection is a legitimate stumbling block that you've got to doing business. For example, the applicant says, I don't want to have to attend basic training. On the other hand, stalls are more about conditions. Oh, I don't want to go to basic training right after graduating high school. I want the summer off. Well, that's a condition. you can easily overcome the stall by responding with, "Okay, let's look at options for a later reporting date for basic training." You see? An objection is a real obstacle. A stall's not nearly as big of a deal. In many cases, a stall occurs because you've moved too quickly through the sales process. This is why you always want to use feedback questions starting in the apply step. If those particular questions are answered positively, objections will never occur in the first place. So, let's talk about some samples of these feedback questions. How does this look so far? Does it look like the kind of opportunity you might be interested in? How does this look to you? What do you think? How are we doing so far? How do you feel about this? Those are questions that are clear feedback questions. Now, what does that mean? This tells you that as long as you're getting a positive response to those particular questions, you can proceed. Now, when you do get an objection, what you want to do is, you want to isolate that objection with something like this. Is there any other reason why we couldn't go ahead with your decision to join? If there are other objections, deal with each separately. The idea is to isolate the objection, and if you've got three objections, then isolate each one of them and say, "Okay, let's talk about this one. Set these two over here, and once this one's resolved, we can then go on to number two and then number three." Understand that objections are things that you can flush out with the right questions, so they never come up in the first place. Dealing with objections by asking the right questions is far better than having the applicant voice a last-minute objection that just pops out of the blue and hits you in the face. This is a very critical, tactical skill, but the real professional recruiter knows how to master it.